player agent, general manager, Brian Lawton, joins us once again. Brian, welcome back to the show. How you doing?
My pleasure, Jason. I'm doing great. How are you?
Hey, I'm good, man. You were, yeah. Hey, you're hired as a GM. You're fired as a GM. Everyone knows, hey, you get hired to get fired as a coach or a GM. That's usually how it works. Most GMs, in most cases, get fired after a few losing seasons. Not 2 years removed, you know, from being a Stanley Cup finalist, a perennial winning team. What do you make of the Boston Bruins? Was this move made solely on the Tyler Seguin trade?
I don't believe it was made solely on that trade, no. I mean, there's been a lot of things that have been talked about. It's only speculation, obviously. Tyler Seguin is at the top of the list. The Johnny Boychuk situation didn't sit well the way that played out. You know, the reality is when you get into these cap problems like the Boston Bruins had, not too dissimilar from the Chicago Blackhawks, you have to make tough decisions. In Chicago's case, they moved Nick Leddy out, and man, has he really blossomed this year. They'd probably like to maybe do that one over. In Boston's case, you know, Johnny Boychuk just played at a higher level, and I can tell you for a fact on this that four or five general managers that I spoke with this year were even surprised at what level he was able to bring to the New York Islanders. So all those things go into it, but, you know, the scuttlebutt on the street would be there was a lot going on in Boston, and there was almost kind of a little bit of a division on the management side between Peter and his group and maybe Cam and, you know, Charlie Jacobs and that whole situation. So ultimately, these things happen. It's a business. Peter will pick himself up. I'm sure he'll do very well. I think he did a very good job in Boston personally.
Brian, I actually mentioned that before this segment. I thought there's got to be something more there. The Seguin trade has not worked out. No GM is perfect, but the body of Pete Chiarelli's work in Boston has been very, very good. Anytime you get a ring out of any run and make another trip back, it's pretty good. So I thought they've really set the bar high, or there's something we don't know. Now, you mentioned Cam Neely and a possible split. Is there anything beyond speculation that you can tell us about that?
No, I know absolutely nothing beyond speculation, obviously, in talking with many different people in the industry. It was just a topic that kept coming up over and over. And, you know, to be truthful, the matter generally was surrounded by the Seguin deal, highlighted again by Boychuk. And I never heard anything more than that, not once. So, you know, is it possible that something happened that nobody knows? Yes, absolutely. Those types of things transpire all the time in management suites. Yeah. And unless Peter wants to talk about it, or Cam or somebody else from their organization that absolutely knows, it's just one of those days where, you know, as a former general manager, you look the ownership in the eye, and it's absolutely their right to make a change if they want. You wish them good luck, and you move on. That's just the nature of the business. It's very cruel. It's not unlike being a player and living in, I'll use my own situation, living in New York City on December 23rd and living in Hartford, Connecticut on December 26th.
Yeah.
It's business. That's all it is. And you accept it, or you don't work in this business.
Yeah. Now, speaking of the business end of things, there's going to be a lot of GMs who retain their jobs who might have some decisions to make on a possible coaching carousel this summer. If you look at the guys who, you know, might be let go, are available, I can't think of a bigger pool of accomplished coaches in recent memory that will be up for grabs.
Yeah, and I talk to a lot of young coaches quite frequently throughout the year, and everybody was targeting this year as a coaching carousel. However, when you see the possibility of guys like Todd McClellan or Mike Babcock moving, they're not going to be unemployed very long, so they're going to be a big part of that. Their jobs may become open, but they'll move on to somewhere else, in my opinion, for sure this year. So I'm looking for the potential for a lot of changes, although we can certainly cross one off in Boston that people were speculating on. Still New Jersey, still possibility of Edmonton, obviously. There's still a lot of possibilities out there that could happen, and it could end up being a huge year where we all have to check our programs to see who's coaching where at the end of the year.
You know, Brian, there could be a lot of big names available. You know, there's still like Dan Bosma, Paul McLean are already out there. You know, you got Todd McClellan who's out there, and then there's speculation Mike Babcock might test the market. Hitchcock or Boudreaux, if they don't have some playoff success, might be on there. And, you know, that might have a lot of management maybe rethinking their current coach. How much of a different, like, would some teams then, do you think, overreact, go out and say, man, we're going to fire our coach with 2 years left in his contract now just because Mike Babcock's available, and Mike Babcock might not be the guy to make their team any better because simply their team isn't that good?
I agree with that. I will tell you that most general managers would probably feel pretty good if they had Mike Babcock at the helm. So, you know, in a game, you know, as a general manager where you basically can control two things, the player personnel and who the head coach is, having that right guy is so critical. It really is. It is not something that you can slide by on. If you do not have the right person down there with the players that you bring together, then a lot of hard work can be for naught. And I've seen this firsthand many times as a player, certainly in Tampa. We searched for the right coach at the right time. And until you get that, it makes the job of being a general manager incredibly frustrating.
Brian, what can a general manager do if he's trying to make a call on his coach? Obviously, wins matter. Stanley Cups matter. Though you can look in the stats column and know how well you're doing in the standings. But there's the old thing, after a while, sometimes even the most intelligent coach, the voice starts to get lost. Whether it's a guy, maybe that's the case in San Jose, I don't know. But Ken Hitchcock has moved around. He's a brilliant coach. How do you weigh that when you're sitting in the GM suite, whether the team's just not good enough or the message is getting lost?
Well, you use all the resources at your disposal. What we're seeing happen quite frequently now is that when a coach is being let go, a lot of times it's triggered by the end of the year exit meetings from, you know, the players with management. And to me, that's a little bit of a dangerous proposition. You know, it's not uncommon for players to not agree with the captain of the ship. You know, being a head coach is incredibly difficult. It seems to me that we're seeing more guys, I wouldn't say they get undercut by players, but, you know, it's very difficult to distribute ice time in a way that you're going to win over the entire group. So the majority of the time, if coaches' livelihood was just based on extra interviews at the end of the year, we'd turn the league over about every other year in coaches, because it's just not coming out in that. And the good general managers are going to look beyond that. They're going to do their own due diligence, and they're going to have their own opinions about how the team is playing, certainly in line with the players that they're trying to acquire. You know, Kevin Cheveldayoff, I thought, did a nice job, you know, in assembling a bigger, faster team with the Winnipeg Jets. It happens to fit the eye of a coach like Paul Maurice. That's what he's looking for. That's a good fit. Mike Yeo here in Minnesota, you know, they've got a smaller, quicker transition team. That happens to fit the eye going the other way with what Chuck Fletcher's trying to do, you know, bringing in a Ryan Suter and building the D that they've built, a little bit smaller but more agile, very good, you know, at turning pucks over in the neutral zone and transitioning the other way. So until you have that symmetry as a GM, they're really hard jobs. And to me, that's what should be the driving force in the evaluation, because there's a lot of really good coaches in the National Hockey League that get fired. And it's not because they're not good coaches. It just may not be the right fit at the right time.
Ryan Lawton joins us talking coaching, GM, ownership decisions, and of course the NHL playoffs. And you know, the emotions run very high at the playoffs. You get in. Now the expectation, you're one of 16. The regular season means nothing, and I'm sure every coach and GM and owner says, okay, my team's got a shot just as good as the other guy. And when you look at the gap differential between the top and the bottom teams, this year maybe more than ever, everybody could convince themselves they have a chance. But eight teams are going to be out in 2 weeks, Brian, and some of those owners will be very frustrated. How often in your experience when you look back, either yourself or other owners, GMs that you've talked to, where they allow their emotions to get the better of them, and then they make a decision to say, okay, well, it's clearly got to be our coach. That's who we're going to get rid of. And it just kind of sets the organization back. How do you avoid that at this time?
Well, the way to avoid it in an organization is to make sure that not only are the coach and GM on the same page, but the ownership needs to be on the same page too. And that can be a really dicey situation. You know, the one thing that's happened in the National Hockey League is to go back to the early 2000s when the game really stunk. It just wasn't that enjoyable to watch. I'm trying to think of a Stanley Cup final that did not live up to the standards that we're seeing today. And those reasons were because there wasn't as much distribution as skill that we see in today's game. Every team has skill. Now, the Carolina Hurricanes, they lost to Detroit in the early 2000s. Was not a great series. Paul Maurice, I believe, was the coach of Carolina. And, you know, their game plan, in my opinion at the time, was to neutralize the skill of the Detroit Red Wings and to hope that they can somehow, over a 5 to 10 minute stretch, win the game. We don't have that style of play now anymore. All these teams seem to have more skill than they did back then, and it's making for a better product. So now you have ownership groups that are looking and saying, hey, we've got skill too. We may be the eighth seed in the Winnipeg Jets, but, you know, look at Schweifele and some of the players that we've been able to bring in, some of the guys they have on their back end. You know, just bringing in even Perreault, Andrew Ladd, you know, Blake Wheeler emerging. So I think that those are very dangerous areas that general managers have to be careful to navigate. They want to make sure that the ownership is completely on par with what they actually have, what they're trying to get to, and how long it'll take. Because when you have an owner that's not happy and is a little bit ahead of what you're trying to do, it can really be a disaster. And generally, when you have a general manager with a good relationship with the owner, the coach gets fired.
Yeah. Brian, I want to talk about a situation specific to Edmonton, tied to what we've already discussed. Obviously, Dallas Eakins started his second season here, was let go. Todd Nelson was put in with the interim tag. Craig McTavish has obviously said there's nothing in it for me to rush. A lot of people think Nelson did a good job with the players that he had at his disposal. Now, if you're Craig McTavish, how long do you sit and wait to find out if some of these big dogs come free? Doesn't mean you're going to get them, but this is an odd year in the sense that there could be some fairly big names available. How do you wait long enough, but not so long, that you got a guy who did a good job here and says, well, I'm second choice, this isn't for me?
Well, I clearly think that Todd Nelson did a very good job. There's no doubt about that. But this comes down to the discussion we just talked about. Does that match up with where Daryl Cates is? Is he seeing it the same way? Is Craig McTavish, first off, agreeing that he did a good job? I think Edmonton continues to have a better team than they've played to, certainly over the course of a season. Every year it seems like they have some stretches, but they have not been able to make a season that the group of players is capable of. And I believe that Craig McTavish is going to turn over every stone until he gets it to that level. And if that means making a change at the head coach position because he feels there's somebody that's going to move the organization forward faster, I absolutely think they will do it. It may not be fair, but again, we're back to the same comments. That's just the business.
Looking at the playoffs, Brian, which matchup are you most interested in watching and why?
I am most interested in watching the New York Islanders and the Washington Capitals I just it felt like every game I watched of these two in the regular season went to overtime. You know, you've got a team in the Capitals that just has not been able to get over the hump at this time of the year. You've got a team in the Islanders that, other than Boychuk and Letty, Halak, a couple other players, it's a pretty limited playoff resume. And yet I think the New York Islanders have a very strong team. I think they've got that type of team that if they let their emotions benefit them, they've got the strength and energy to come out and make a real nice playoff run. So Barry Trotz has got Washington going good. He's got him playing responsible. He's got Alex Ovechkin being Alex Ovechkin. Braden Holtby all of a sudden looked a lot better this year, adding in a Matt Niskanen and a Brooks Orr pick, settled their back end down. Barry Trotz is known for the defensive end. I just think that's going to be a really intriguing matchup, and I'm looking forward to watching that one.
Well, there's so many storylines there. The Travis Hamonic injury to the Islanders is brutal news for them. And, you know, the Washington Capitals, Alex Ovechkin, even more determined two-way player maybe than he's ever been. Him and Backstrom on two lines. They've got better defense, I think, than Washington's had in probably the last two decades from top to bottom. They're a very good team. And if the Islanders can beat them, then, you know, then the Islanders are legit. I'm actually picking Washington in that series. I want your thoughts on the Pittsburgh Penguins. And, you know, I know they've got a lot of injuries. There were some reports if they lose in the first round, the organization might look at dealing Malkin. Do you think that's a realistic possibility?
Personally, I do. I really do. I think expectations are high there. Obviously, you know, Ray Shiro, Dan Bylsma out. They make changes. They talk about some of the positives that went on. At times, they looked very good, but the way that Pittsburgh finished was obviously not how they wanted to finish. So I think there's a lot of pressure there. You've got two, certainly, of the top five, six centers in the National Hockey League on the same team. People believe in strength down the middle as being a real benefactor for a Stanley Cup-type team. You know, but it just has not played out that way for the Pittsburgh Penguins. You know, the end of the season there was abysmal for them. They're going up against a very talented New York Ranger team that can beat you a variety of different ways. Alain Vigneault continues to prove that he's one of the elite coaches in the National Hockey League. This is going to be another very interesting series, but I would be surprised if the Penguins won it, and I wouldn't be surprised if everything is on the table with the exception of Sid Crosby's name when it's all said and done.
Brian, one last one for me. When I look at the Winnipeg Jets, and I know they're considered underdogs in this, they look like a team to me that's built for playoffs. Big and strong, puck pressure, so on and so forth. We know what they look like. Do they have a chance in that series?
Yeah, I absolutely think they do. I believe that Anaheim will win out in the end, but the Winnipeg Jets, you know, Paul Maurice, they've just done a phenomenal job this year. It's the back end that really stands out for me when you can feel the Myers and Buffalo and Trouba on the right side. That's not going to make for a lot of fun for a lot of left wings in the National Hockey League or on Anaheim. And I just think that they are a much deeper team than realized. They're a much faster team than anybody realizes. It's going to be an unbelievable test for Anaheim. I would have said before the final seedings that whoever Anaheim plays, they're going to push around. And I don't think that would be the case with Winnipeg. So that'll be another good one. Anaheim's back end didn't look the way I wanted it over the last 15, 20 games. It didn't look like a Stanley Cup contending back end, but they had some injuries to their credit, and if they can pull it together, then I think they're poised for a pretty strong run, particularly with LA and San Jose both out of the mix this year.
Brian, always good to catch up with you. Appreciate your time.
My pleasure, Jason. Thank you very much.